Welcome to Well-Versed, where we bring biblical principles of governance to governmental leaders and you. This is the Well-Versed Podcast.
We're going to go right on to Dr. William Barker. So honored to have him on. He is not only a patriot, he has served our country in the U.S. Air Force. He's a brilliant scholar in Middle Eastern languages. That in itself is an unbelievable accomplishment. And now he is the president of a university in Central South Carolina. It's one that I happen to love and respect. I had the privilege of speaking there on their 100th anniversary a number of years ago. There is an interesting emotional tie we have to that university. So I'm going to take the privilege here of just introducing that. And then I want you to hear from Dr. Barker what he's doing to stand firm in the midst of the, how do I say this nicely? So many evangelical colleges going woke, and he's not one of them. He's not permitting that. You have to really check carefully when you go to an institution now or send your kids or your grandkids to one, because things have changed dramatically. So don't just believe the website. You got to find out what the school actually really believes. Otherwise, you'll pay a high price with your children. But the particular emotional story that I want to tell you is, I got permission from two people to tell this, one being a woman named Marilyn, who's on now here with us, and another one named Judy, that's my sister. If you can, Tristan, I don't know if you can bring Judy on for just a moment, and then we'll bring Marilyn on, and then we'll go right to Dr. Barker. Many, many years ago, when my sister Judy was in high school, that was a long time ago, in high school, she was dating, I got permission to tell this, she was dating a man named Gordon. She appreciated Gordon a great deal. Gordon and his family lived in Oregon, and he was going to school originally in Kansas, where we lived, and that's how Judy and Gordon started dating. But then he decided he wanted to go to school at a school in Central South Carolina to study under a brilliant scholar by the name of Roy S. Nicholson. And so as on his way from Oregon, remember, he's driving from Oregon. This is 1964 or something. I don't know what year it is. No way earlier than that. 63. Okay. Driving from Oregon all the way to South Carolina, clear across the nation. And he gets as far as our place. His sister, Crystal, decides to go also to what was then called Central Wesleyan College, now called Southern Wesleyan University. So the two of them are traveling together. So they come to our place because Judy and Gordon were dating. And so they spend a number of days with us on our farm. And then they go, they've gone about halfway. Now they go the rest of the way to South Carolina. It was only a month later, I suppose. We can talk about the date in a moment. I remember right where I was in a chemistry class, high school chemistry class, we got the word that a fire broke out in a dormitory, a girl's dormitory. Gordon knew that his sister Crystal was in that dorm. He put a ladder up. Of course, this is the night hours, and they're trying to get everybody out as the dorm is burning. He put a ladder up and went up and broke the window out and felt the bed, and she wasn't in it. So in all the chaos, he assumed she was out. What he did not know is that particular night, she didn't have a roommate right then. For some reason, she slept in the bed across the room, not in the one he felt. And he didn't know that. He was that close to saving her, and she lost her life, Crystal Bennett. When I realized I was going to be interviewing Dr. Barker, they named a dormitory, the Stuart Bennett Hall, after the two young women who died, one with an S name of Stuart and one with the name of Bennett. So Stuart Bennett Hall is on that campus. In fact, when I went there to speak a number of years ago, I said, drive me by the Stuart Bennett Hall. I want to see that. We remember that day well. I don't know if you can bring Marilyn on. Tristan, can you bring Marilyn on right now? This is Marilyn Bennett Rust, and she is the sister of Crystal Bennett. And so I just had the privilege moments before we went on the air of introducing Dr. Barker, the president of the institution, to Crystal Bennett's sister. Or did we lose? Did we lose Marilyn? Is she still on? She was on moments ago. Marilyn, can you hear me? Can you unmute right now? Is that a possibility? I just want to introduce you formally. Well, Marilyn, I can see you. Can you unmute? And can you also bring your video on right now? Are you able to do that, Marilyn? I don't think she's going to be able to do it. Maybe she can do it a little bit later. But I did have the privilege just moments ago of introducing them to each other, which was a special moment. Having
Sinners
said
unmute. Did I do it?
Well, we can hear your voice, Marilyn.
Oh, but you can't see me, huh?
No, we can't. We cannot see. We could see you a moment ago before we went on the air, but you've disappeared. I don't know if you can, down the left-hand corner at the bottom. But you had the privilege of meeting Dr. Barker. There you are. Now we can see you. I don't know. Say a word, Marilyn.
Okay. So, yes. Can you hear me?
We sure can. Go ahead.
Okay. Oh, wow. This is fun. I was not anticipating this Sunday afternoon, but oh my, you know, Central will always be a very huge part of my life. I was a senior in high school when the fire happened on December 7th of 1962. And what a surprise to get woken up in the middle of the night by my dad that there's been a fire there. And then we waited and Dr. Nicholson called us. And then, but they said they were still looking for Crystal. But then 2 hours later, we couldn't wait any longer. My mother called back and they were concerned about my dad because he had had a serious heart attack shortly before this happened. But anyway, God's ways are above our ways. And it was very devastating to me, especially because we were less than 2 years apart and she was absolutely my very best friend. So to lose her was traumatic. And then I went there the next fall, they offered me a scholarship. But it totally changed the university. It was a small business Bible college of 150. And when I went back 50 years later for the reunion, it was a university of what, 2,300 or something. So we just have to trust that God knows best and he loves us and he's working all things for our good. That's the two things that I hang on to every day. And I love the Lord very much. Thank you, Jim. You've been a special friend. I met you when we came to meet the Garlow family, when Gordon and Judy were being friends. And then we got to go to Miltonville Wesleyan College together, Jim and I did. And then we end up at Bethany Nazarene College together again, too.
Yes, yeah, that's right.
Jim did the Miltonville reunion where I actually met Tony Rust, who I was married to for 35 years.
That's right.
And then he had colon cancer and went to heaven ahead of me. And that's not the way it's supposed to be.
Yeah. Yes. Well, Marilyn, thank you for coming on. I sprung this on her just a little bit before we went on the air and said, Marilyn, come on. I want you to meet Dr. Barker. Marilyn, thank you for being on with us. Dr. Barker, thank you for indulging us in a little bit in this particular story. I want you to unmute right now and I want to turn it to you. Dr. Barker, I cannot fathom what it's like being a university, an evangelical Christian college, not professor, but president in the midst of the pressures you're under. And I had the privilege of meeting you, talking to you recently, and I came away remarkably encouraged on how strong you stand. You really are a blessing. So share with us if you would, Dr. Barker.
Yeah, Pastor Jim, thank you so much. I'm humbled by your words. And I just want to say to you, Pastor Jim, to Rosemary, to Judy, to the entire World Prayer Network, I am grateful to be here with you this evening, but I'm also grateful for your ministry. Thank you so much. Prayers, God hears his people when they pray. You just mentioned Professor Nicholson. Professor Nicholson, many, many years ago, was a big supporter of prayer. We reference his quotes on prayer all the time in my office. As a reminder that, you know, if we haven't prayed, we really haven't accomplished anything. No matter what the agenda or the checklist says, we always begin with prayer. In fact, very organically, at the beginning of my time here, folks in my office just started beginning and closing each week with prayer. It's just grown and grown. And other members of the administration and support staff just gather to pray at the start of the week. And it is hugely important to us. So seriously, thank you. In terms of Southern Wesleyan University, you're right. There are a lot of views in our world today, in our culture, which are not only unbiblical, they're actually now anti-biblical. And the cultural pressure on colleges and universities to conform to that, even so-called Christian colleges, has been extraordinary. And I hate to say it, I mean, it truly breaks my heart. I pray that the Lord brings colleges back to faithfulness. We need faithful colleges all across the country in every congressional district. We need people in universities that are standing firm for the truth. But the way that we stand firm is, you know, we say when students graduate from Southern Wesleyan University, they're not just walking across the stage to get a diploma and move on to what's next in life and begin the business of real living and real adulthood. We actually say, you know, when they're here, there are four things we want to accomplish with every single Southern Wesleyan University student. The first one is when they walk across that stage, we want them to have deep in their hearts and in their lives a sense of biblical faith. And that begins with a real love for Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, that they have an allegiance and a loyalty to Jesus. And along with that, a willingness to submit to the scriptures, even when the scriptures say things that may be unpopular in our world today. So biblical faithfulness is that first outcome we're looking for. Secondly, academic rigor. And by that, we're actually going back to the scriptures. When Jesus is asked what the greatest commandment is, he goes out of his way to not quote from the Hebrew text that can be a little elusive, perhaps in interpretation. He gives the very clear Greek rendering of the Old Testament, Deuteronomy 6:5. He says, you love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, and all your strength. And so we believe if you really want to obey the first commandment, you can't be lazy. It's fascinating that in the world today, we have at our fingertips more information than ever before in human history. And yet we so rarely actually pick up and engage the scripture and how it applies to the most salient issues of our day. So we want to train students, whatever their level. I have four kids between the ages of 5 and 15. One of them has special needs. He has Williams syndrome. Another one is ADHD. Another one is in the Talented and Gifted program. And the other one's 5. And honestly, her biggest intellectual concern is how she can be a princess every day, right? But my point is, for each one of those four kids, we are challenging them, not coddling them, but coming alongside of them and challenging them to grow in the way that they think to make them effective Christian thinkers. And that's what we want to do with our college students. Biblical faithfulness, number one. Effective Christian thinkers, number two. The third thing is vocational effectiveness. This is the big return on investment that most of the country, this is the sole concern about college and university, but we care about it too. We want to make sure our students, when they graduate, can go on to a job or graduate school. And we actually have one of the highest rates in the country. Between 92 and 96% of our graduates report 5 years out after graduation that they are thrilled with their education at Southern Wesleyan University and feel well prepared for their jobs or grad school. And then fourth and finally, financial sustainability. We try to keep our prices low. We give a lot of financial aid to our students. And so you add up those four things: biblical faithfulness, academic rigor, vocational effectiveness, and financial sustainability. And I say, you know, we really just want to graduate students who still love Jesus, who are able to think critically and effectively as Christians in the world, who are able to get a job or get into grad school, and who are not broke. So we think those are four pretty good outcomes. And that's part of the way we battle the cultural pressures. Additionally, I take one further step. I've made my stance very clear to our trustees since the time that I interviewed, and continually so, where I stand on particular issues. I have also done so with our faculty and staff in full faculty and staff meetings and in writings and in interviews. And I personally take the time to interview every student-facing position before we hire. We're very serious. You want to know how not to do damage to kids? Don't hire faculty and staff who are going to mislead them and teach in an anti-biblical fashion. So that's just a little bit about us. You obviously got me on the topic I'm pretty passionate about, Pastor Jim. So that's what we're trying to do at Southern Wesleyan University.
I probably should make this clarification. There's about 15 schools across America approximately that have the name Wesleyan in them. That means most of them have a Methodist background. But all of those, whether it's Kansas Wesleyan, Ohio Wesleyan, Wesleyan in Connecticut, regardless of the state, all of them are quite left-wing liberal. And the exception is those that are under what's called the Wesleyan denomination. So I wanted to, you have to know which Wesleyan school is solid biblically, which is not. The ones that are, it's Southern Wesleyan, Indiana Wesleyan, Oklahoma Wesleyan, and then Houghton University. But all the other names of Wesleyans, I would not send my children there or grandchildren there at all. Doctor, let me ask you a question. It's going to be a negative question, and that is, why is it that we have seen what's called the third wave? There was the wave of the Ivy League institutions. There were waves in the 1800s. And now this third pretty massive wave of evangelical colleges that have lost their Christocentricity. They've lost their biblical focus, and they capitulate primarily in the area of homosexuality, primarily that area more than anything else. It's actually at the base of it is not giving respecting authority of Scripture. But why do you think that is so widespread and has impacted America so severely over the last 30 years, but especially the last 5 years?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think there are three answers right off the top of my head that I would say. First of all, roughly once every 90 years or so, we find institutions, regardless of their original charter, their original bylaws, but once roughly every 90 years or so, give or take a decade, in the United States, they begin to drift leftward. And I think that that's just part of the nature of sin and Satan in the world trying to damage institutions. I also think God cares a lot more about individual and group human faithfulness than he does about institutions. And so I think, you know, the eyes of the Lord move to and fro throughout the earth to support those whose hearts are strongly his, right? But it doesn't say that he will always strongly support institutions. And so I think, first of all, it's just a matter that this is why I take the time to interview every student facing position throughout the university. I mean, that is dozens and scores of interviews annually. But I do that because we're trying to protect the mission and we look at the individual people. The second part of that drift is I really do believe that in the post-World War II era, post-Vietnam era, in sort of the rise of the self-help generation, the focus drifted away from the original liberal arts view of leading people to truth and wisdom for the sake of the transformation of the student. At a Christian university, that's great, right? Because we know that Jesus is the truth and the wisdom of God. But the liberal arts movement moved away from that and just began to try to originally send students to sort of a larger view of knowledge in the world without any sort of standard or true north, no compass to guide them. Well, when you remove the standard, when you remove the true north, you're going to end up in all sorts of places. And that's what spiritually happened with our universities at the same time. And this is goes hand in hand with sort of the demise of the educational institutions in general. The American church in particular, probably the Western church in general, certainly the American church in particular, since the 1980s initially began to really fear the loss of attendance. And so is what they did, they focused so much on evangelism, they either forgot to evangelize or they said, you know what, discipleship on Sunday morning might be too confrontational. It might drive people away. And we stopped discipling. We stopped saying the hard truths on human sexuality, on biblical views on gender, one man, one woman, marriage between one man and one woman, that you don't change genders. We stopped teaching about the value of human life in the womb. We stopped teaching and discipling because we feared that it might become political. We feared that it might drive people away. And so I think probably great intentions of bringing people to Christ, but then not following through on that discipleship. And that's caught up with us to now, where we have a society of Christians in our world today that don't know how to speak in a discipled way, don't know how to think in a discipled way about some of the most pressing, complex cultural issues of our times. This is why Christian universities are so important. We have parents that send their kids, often pay large sums of money to homeschool their kids K-12 or to send them to private Christian academies K-12 and then send them off to secular schools and expect them to come back still as Christians. Instead, by Thanksgiving, they're coming back saying things that are anti-Christian and Marxist in nature. Send them to a legitimately Christian university where they're going to hang on to their faith and live that out. And then the third and final reason after, you know, first of all, as I said, institutional drift by its nature. Secondly, the convergence of the change from liberal arts to a more non-principled approach to learning, and at the same time, the American church not discipling. The third thing is the cultural pressure over the last 5 years, Pastor Jim, as you and your audience will know, has greatly increased. There is almost a Bolshevik-style pressure in our culture today, some parts of the country, to conform to anti-Christian narratives or you will be shunned. And we have to have the moral clarity to understand what is true and right and good and according to the scriptures and what Jesus would have us do. We also need the moral courage to take a stand.
You're listening to Dr. William Barker, president of Southern Wesleyan University. And as I interview these various professors, or Christian presidents rather, I do so to help you be aware, moms and dads and grandparents, places you could invest your money and your children in an environment that they won't come home, just like you said, Thanksgiving, spewing anti-God things. I'll take just a moment to talk about this, and then I want to come right back to him with more questions. But this is an area I feel intensely passionate about. My father did not have a day of college, but he felt very strongly about Christian education. And he tried to raise money for people to get them to Christian colleges. And when I became a pastor, he would say to me, Jim, get the students to Christian colleges. I jokingly say I've spent more time as a pastor trying to persuade people, the students, to go to Christian colleges than any other pastor in America. A little hard to defend that, I admit. But I was one of these guys from the old school. I stood in the foyer of the church and greeted everybody, even my pastor in Skyline. It's an hour and 15 minutes. The line would be after each service. And I'd greet people. And as every high school kid or junior college students I came through, I would say, are you open to going to a Christian college? And parents, are you open to going out of state potentially? And I literally would phone the president or the director of admissions that moment with my cell phone, hand it to that kid. I did that over and over and over and over. And said, get that kid to your school. Did everything I can. I wish I could tell you everybody listened to me, but I can tell you what happens when they don't. They send them off to a school, and then they come back. If they're not careful on what Christian college, they so-called Christian college they go to, they'll come back. I heard this from a mother just recently, came back, and the student was condemning his mother for having a gas stove. She was harming the environment. That's how ludicrous this gets. And coming back and saying, well, you're too cisgender, or there's 56 genders, or I think maybe I'm gay, or I think you get the picture. And they say, wait a minute, I just invested $56,000 for the semester to send you, for the year, to send you there to come back and talk like this. And we lose a tremendous amount of our students at age 18, from 18 to 22, that leave the Christian faith because the parents are not careful where they move them to in that particular. It's very vulnerable from 18 to 22. Once you're through 22, 23, you can go to a more liberal graduate school and stand it, withstand it. I myself did that, but I could stand it because I had built into me a foundation I could not be and would not be shaken. Doctor, how many colleges are there in the CCCU, Christian colleges and universities?
Well, there are dozens now. I couldn't give you a number of total number of the CCC off the top of my head.
It's about 150 maybe or something like that. Would that be?
Sounds right. That sounds right.
There's quite a few. And I'm not going to put Dr. Barker on the spot on this, but I'll say my opinion on this. Of the approximately 150, let's say, that are part of the Consultation of Christian Colleges and Universities, CCCU, headquarters here in Washington, D.C., where I am right now. I suspect, the truth be known, there's probably not more than 20 that I can think of that I would trust my children or my grandchildren to go to. I'll let that sink in, and I can back that up with why that's the case. I don't want to take time from Dr. Barker tonight. Doctor, if you want to challenge me on those, you feel free to do that. But I just want to throw out to you, I was lecturing on this topic, and I tried to figure out why have we lost so many Christian universities. University of California at Berkeley was once a godly school. University of Michigan was once a godly school. All the Ivy League institutions, except maybe one, were all founded for the perpetration of the gospel and training Christian ministers. How did we lose all of them? And why is there a wave of that today? Some schools that I could name, I would have promoted 30 years ago, I wouldn't ever send a kid to today. Why is that? And I came to this conclusion. I had to lecture on this 3 hours one time. And I came to the conclusion, I could summarize one statement, that schools will capitulate, individuals will capitulate, local congregations will, denominations will capitulate once they long for the accolades of other humans more than they fear and reverence God. They will capitulate on that. Doctor, you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. That's why truly at the heartbeat of our pursuit of academic excellence, one of the things that we really emphasize is that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. You know, I'm a graduate PhD from Cambridge University, and it's a fascinating thing for a school that Cambridge was founded, of course, 1209 AD. Oxford was 1205, Cambridge was 1209. And so you have some very committed Christian universities when they were originally founded. And still to this day, if you go to the door of St. John's College Chapel at Cambridge University, you find a very old, ancient sculpture of the Lady Wisdom cradling in her arms the church and stamping out a blind but deadly demon of ignorance. Now, that is so significant because you don't find that on the library door. You find that on the chapel door. And it is the Lady Wisdom cradling the church. And I just think we have to get back to seeing students pursue not just knowledge, not just the transmission of information, but we have to see students transformed by the wisdom of God and knowing that when we fear God instead of fearing what people think of us, what society thinks of us, then we're on the path. To wisdom. So I completely agree with you, Jim. I think that that when we turn for accolades, when we want the social acceptance at the academic conferences and presenting of papers and in what now are our dissenting views on a number of key areas throughout the humanities, the social sciences, the natural sciences, the arts, when we're presenting our faculty, when our staff and our athletic coaches are on the playing fields, And they're saying, no, we won't play against our female sports teams will not play against a team that has a transgender athlete on the other side. We don't believe it in principle, so we're not going to affirm it as truth. And it's also a danger to our female athletes. See, these are all things where you could be tempted to simply capitulate. And the honest fact is there's not beyond the accolades and the acceptance of the broader secular society, there is also a ton of finances that are being poured into progressive institutions with the idea of ideologically training our youth. See, there's a certain degree in which Satan gets it, I'll put it that way, and knows that if he can capture the youth and their hearts and minds, that he's changed the world. You want to win the world for Christ tomorrow, capture the college students of today for Christ.
I had the privilege of talking earlier today to your colleague at Houghton University, Wayne Lewis, who thinks very highly of you, and he's doing a remarkable job up
it's
there.
It's a mutual. Wayne is doing a great job. For any of you who know Wayne Lewis at Houghton, he's an absolute gem and a man who deeply loves God.
I want you to realize how unique this interview and why I've taken the time for this type of interview. You're listening to a college president who will not capitulate. And why that's important. Tomorrow, a book is coming out. It's being released tomorrow. I won't say the name, but Dr. Barker would know the author, called The Courage of the Middle or something like that. And that is capitulation. Any way you slice it, any way you dice it, that is capitulation going on in evangelical schools. And you heard what he just said a moment ago. If a team comes up and it's loaded with guys who think they're girls on that team or even one, he's not going to subject the women of his basketball team or his volleyball team to the kind of abuse having to play against a guy who calls himself a girl. That's a man with not willing to capitulate on the issue. It's difficult to run an institution, so some of you may want to financially support or you may want to send your kids to that campus. So, Doctor, how can they either make a donation to the school, because I know it costs millions to operate. How can they send their kids? What's the website?
Yeah, it's simple. It's swu.edu, SWU.edu. That's for Southern Wesleyan University. And yeah, that's the thing. You know, Bob Woodson, who you all may know and be friends with, a dear Christian man who just visited our campus recently for homecoming and spoke, deeply loves the Lord. He said, you know, it's great to pray for me, but I also need you to pay for me. We do. We need folks that will come and donate, but we also need you to trust us with your sons and your daughters. I promise you, we will invest in them and love them. We are part of our biblical faithfulness means we're a community of compassion and caring and coming alongside kids, no matter what their struggles are, no matter what their backgrounds are, no matter what their temptations are, and really doing our best to present them with both love and truth, and guide them along the way at this very pivotal age where they'll decide, is their relationship with Christ their own or not?
Southern Wesleyan University, and if by chance Central South Carolina seems like a long ways from your place, let me tell you, it's worth it to send your kid to that kind of a place to keep their faith. That is worth the distance by far. Give the website one more time, and then I suppose on there, if they want to talk about to someone, their children coming there, they can just click somewhere on admissions. And
absolutely, absolutely. It's swu.edu for Southern Wesleyan University, swu.edu, swu.edu. And there's an easy click to admissions there. You can get right to our admissions office. You also can just scroll to the bottom of the page for the contact information and get the university line, and it will put you straight through when you ask to be put through to the admissions office. And we would love to connect with you about your student coming. Likewise, if you'd like to give, it's swu.edu/giving. swu.edu/giving. But you can also find that on a simple search website on how to give.
Two final things. I'm going to ask in a moment if there's anything I should have asked you and I failed to ask. And then also, on your campus is a most unique structure, Freedom's Hill Chapel. Freedom's Hill Chapel, unique. Do you want to just say a word about that building?
Yeah, we're so proud of Freedom's Hill Chapel and its history. It really is the spiritual epicenter of our campus in many ways. You find people praying in Freedom's Hill Chapel. We had a ceremony this past fall for new faculty members where they were anointed and prayed for by our provost and our university chaplain and several other members of the administration and faculty. You find students going there often to pour their hearts out to God. It's an amazing place. And what it is one of the first abolitionist churches in the South, founded in 1848. So do the math on that. This is pre-Civil War. It's one thing to be an abolitionist in the United States when you're living in Boston in 1848. It's something entirely different to be part of an abolitionist church in 1848 in the Carolinas. This church originally was in North Carolina. It was lovingly brought to our campus about 20 years ago, and we preserve it. You can still put your fingers in the bullet holes where when the church was surrounded by slave owners, they began to open fire on the congregation as they worshiped God. And not only were they an abolitionist church preaching God's word faithfully, they also were an initial site for the Underground Railroad, worked with Harriet Tubman, smuggled slaves, escaped slaves up to free states in the North. And so it's a great heritage. And it actually, to be honest with you, Jim, in all light of all that we've talked about, it really reminds us on our campus that we need moral clarity from the scriptures, and we need the moral courage of Jesus to take a stand for these issues, to do so in a loving and compassionate way, but also in a firm way. So yeah, we love Freedom's Hill Chapel. Thank you for asking about that.
The Wesleyan denomination was founded in 1843 when a group of Methodist pastors were kicked out of their denomination because they would not be silent about the sin, the racism of slavery. They were booted out of the Methodist, what was then called the Methodist Episcopal Church, and they formed the Wesleyan Methodist Connection, they called it. And their early churches were one day's journey apart, a part of the Underground Railroad, as was Freedom's Hill Chapel, to smuggle the slaves out of the North, out of the South, into the North. And in fact, one of the members, I believe, of this very church, his name was Elijah McPherson. Elijah
McPherson. That's right.
Was hung for believing that Black people should not be slaves. They hung
not,
it. They actually needed the. There was an expression in that county, "We need this rope to hang another Wesleyan," and they cut him down a little bit too early. He barely survived. His wife nursed him back to health. Finally, he was able to function normally again after a long time and survived it. But Lauto, Indiana, our church there, has bullet holes. We still have the doors. And Freedom's Hill Chapel is beautiful to see. This old building from 1848, small little church, restored and placed on the campus there as a reminder of how to stand with courage. Doctor, what else should I have asked you that I failed to ask you?
Well, I think you've done a great job, and I appreciate it, Pastor Jim. One thing I would add to that Freedom's Hill story with those early Wesleyans and Adam Crooks, the first pastor, they actually, after they had hung Elijah McPherson, he survived. They actually went and cut that down, and they made pews out of some of that tree, some of which are in Freedom's Hill Chapel, or using pews to this day. And they made a gavel out of it that they use for their church business meetings, which we still have and is occasionally used for our board of trustee meetings. So a great legacy and a great heritage there to remind us to take a stand. You know, one thing that we didn't touch on that is important to me just a little bit because of my personal background and also the current events that we're experiencing in the last 24 hours is Israel. And Southern Wesleyan University, you know, we signed on. I was proud to sign on this fall in October of last year. More than 100 other colleges in a statement called Universities United Against Terrorism. And I've had an Israeli flag flying at the president's house continuously since the attacks of October 7th. We denounce Islamic terrorism wherever it takes place, whether it's against Jews in Israel or Christians in Nigeria or right here at home in America. I was so glad to have Pastor Stephen on here earlier and to hear his heart in ministry for the Arab peoples. You know, as you know, I'm in the military. And one of the lessons that I had coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan was just this deep move on my heart that we need to pray for missionaries, for God to raise up people in those contexts, to lead people to faith in Christ. And so grateful for that. And of course, this is personal for me. My mom's side of the family has a strong Jewish heritage, including 17 members of our family that were murdered in the Holocaust, distant relatives. My wife and I met when we were both students in Jerusalem. And just last month, I personally led Passover Seder for the Southern Wesleyan University community and a lot of the churches in our area were invited. Several of our guests from out of state that made their way for that as well. At that time, one of our professors actually brought a 16th century Torah scroll that the university owns that we purchased some time ago from Jerusalem. It was one that had been smuggled out of Germany during the Holocaust and survived. It was amazing to see our students look at the Torah scroll, interact with it, and begin to see the Hebrew Bible there in the scroll form. So in any case, this is near and dear to our hearts, and we're trying to teach students, you know, love the Israelis, love the Palestinians, love the Gazans, hate terrorism, and be clear-eyed about it. And, you know, the scripture says in Psalm 122 to pray for the peace of Jerusalem, but then the very next praise says to pray for security within her walls. So we're praying for peace and security for the folks in Israel, and we're praying for a massive turning of hearts to Jesus among all the populations of the Middle East. So that's just one thing I would want to mention. We're a school that I think is very clear-eyed about the world in which we live and tries to make a difference for the gospel and the kingdom in that regard.
So appreciative what you just shared there. Folks, I know, Doctor, you're pretty busy. Do you ever have time to take speaking engagements if someone wanted to have you, or at least on Zoom? Do Zoom calls, is there a way they get in touch with you if they want you to come speak?
We would be honored and delighted. Absolutely. And the easiest way is just to email me at president@swu.edu. That's just president@swu.edu. And if I'm not back in touch with you personally, someone from my office will be. And I welcome opportunities to travel, to speak. And for some reason, we can't work out to do it via Zoom. But it would warm my heart to connect with other Christians as much as possible. You know, I was a pastor for many years and still serve as a chaplain in the United States Air Force Reserve. And I love connecting with God's people. So thank you for that, Pastor Jim. President@swu.edu is the email address.
At SWU, the reminder is SWU. And you're listening to William Barker, who is a PhD from Cambridge University in Ancient and Middle Eastern language. So he certainly knows the text and what it says. Doctor, it is such a joy having you on.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Please read the show notes for additional details if you would like a copy of the book or resources mentioned. Remember that Well-Versed is a 501c3 tax-deductible nonprofit organization. We rely on your support and partnership.
Don't forget to hit subscribe to keep up to date with our latest episodes. Leave us a 5-star review and tell your friends to subscribe too.
Thank you for listening to the Well-Versed podcast. For more information, please go to www.wellversedworld.org.